Hey, hit me!
Are you ready for the deadliest news, issues, comments, and people? Well, on now is National Talk Black with Trendy Trev, going live from BBM through the National Indigenous Radio Service. Give us a call now, 1-800-422-416. National Talk Black with Trendy Trev.
Yes, very good morning, you daily mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from Macquarie. I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country, BBM Bumbleby Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to the National Radio Service. You can have your saber calls from that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, digital dilemma. Optometrists ring alarm bells on excessive screen time. New research unveils Generation Alpha across Australia, spending on average 3.5 hours per day on screens. Australia parents and teachers aren't confident in best prevention techniques to avoid visual damage. Look, with that, we're going to catch up a yarn now with Michael Agravin, optometrist and development consultant on the line. We have Michael. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Good morning. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much for coming to the program. So, look, with schools starting and our kids' eyesight is so very important, can you tell us more about the research findings, please?
Absolutely. This research was completed by Spectavis optometrists, and basically, as you said there, children aged 5 to 12, they're spending well in excess of the recommended amount of time on the screens per day. So the recommended time by World Health Organization is about 1 hour a day, and as you've mentioned there, a lot of Aussie kids are clocking up 3.5 hours per day or more by the time you take into account screen time at school and at home.
So why is screen time increasing for Aussie children?
So I think on the back of COVID, we've seen a lot of our world move virtually, and some of that has stayed there as well. So a lot of learning platforms are delivered virtually. And then, of course, our younger generations are being brought up with the screens as well, whether that be the big screen, the TV, the iPad, or the mobile phone there as well. So what the implications of this can be for children is basically some digital eye strain. So we've got to remember now that the eyes are muscles. So, if they're working hard to keep your vision clear up close, then you may see symptoms of digital eye strain throughout the day, which can be headaches, blurry vision, watery eyes. You might notice your child rubbing your eyes or anything like that.
Exactly. So how does myopia impact the day-to-day life and how has it been treated?
Well, Trevor, myopia, or short-sightedness as it's more commonly known as, it's actually on the rise around Australia and the world globally. So World Health Organization predicting that over half the global population are going to be short-sighted by 2050. We can attribute this to, our changing lifestyles in that we're spending more time on screens and less time actually outside. So I guess the implications of this in younger children is that, if the myopia or the short-sightedness is undetected, it's potential that they can fall behind in class. And some of our research actually revealed that, some primary school teachers are actually witnessing the negative impacts of poor vision on their younger students. So the call-out for Spectavis optometrists is that before we go back to school for this start of the school year, to put an eye test on the back-to-school checklist just to ensure that your child's vision and eye health has been checked and then any anomalies can be accounted for, and we can put a treatment plan in place if required.
Are you finding numbers are climbing regarding children looking for needing glasses?
So I was saying that the myopia and short-sightedness prevalence is certainly on the rise there. And then worryingly, hand-in-hand with that, so we're still finding from our research that nearly one in three children under nine have never had an actual eye test before. So it is worrying that, you know, there could be eye health and eye vision problems out there that are undetected.
So a lot of work need to be done. So it's checkups. We did talk about medical checkups. Eyes should be front and centre as well in regarding checkups, especially with young ones getting back to school.
Yeah, so, I mean, for the whole family, we say for everyone, at least every 2 years, to have an eye test, or sooner if recommended by your optometrist. It is great that Specsavers is still offering bulk billed eye tests. So if you've got a Medicare card, there's actually no out-of-pocket fee for your eye test. So that's great in reducing the financial burden of taking that care as well.
Michael, thank you very much. Where do Aussies, Aussie parents, where can they go to get more information?
Yes, yeah, so for more information, you can head to our website, which is specsavers.com.au/stores. You'll be able to find your nearest store and book in for a bulk billed eye check at a convenient time for you.
Okay, beautiful. Thank you very much, Michael. All the best to you and Happy New Year.
Thank you, Trevor. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. There's nothing I would rather be than to be an Aboriginal and watch you take my precious land away. For nothing gives me greater joy than to watch you fill each girl and boy with superficial existential shit. Now you may think I'm cheating, but I'll be satisfied to rebuild your convict ships and sail you on the tide.
Tanya Kernighan with Trendy Trev, and you're tuned in to National Talk Black.
Call us now, 1-800-422-416.
Roll my toy, patoli man toy, roll my toy, pa. Roll my toy, patoli man toy, roll my toy, pa. Roll my toy, patoli man toy, roll my toy, pa. Sesseroy, patoli man toy, roll my toy, pa. Roll my toy, patoli man toy, roll my toy, pa. Seroy patoli matoy parol matoy pa, rol matoy patoli matoy parol matoy pa. Seroy patoli matoy parol matoy pa, rol matoy patoli matoy parol matoy pa. Seroy patoli matoy parol matoy pa.
Salasia kam, killing and pillaging, they don't give a damn. Burning the villagers in a demonic craze. Broadswords, knives, and their muskets ablaze. War Salasia come. Listen to my drum.
Roll my toy, patoli man toy, roll my toy, pa. Roll my toy, patoli man toy, roll my toy, pa. Roll my toy, patoli man toy, roll my toy, pa.
Salasia come, Salasia come. Piadra Miriam from Lassendam.
ran to the sow, Yabi Alam. An old man and his wife were hacked with a knife. Wasalasi Yakam. Listen to my drum. Salasi Yakam, Kometa Milram from Sebek to Kiam. Might get their bones lay exposed to bleach. In the sun, there's blood on the beach. War Salasi Yakam, listen to my drum. Remember your past. You will make those same mistakes again. Your future's bright at last. But if you forget your past, you will make those same mistakes again. You lay buried on the shores of Werbadu. I hear your spirit cry like the call of the moon. You call to me, come listen to my drum. You call to me, come listen to my drum. Nimau is calling you, come listen to my drum.
Yeah. listen to me. I'm from the bush. I'm talking to you. From the bush. Got my life. From the bush. I'm different to you. You've got all you need. Freedom and former. In the bush. You've got all you need. Can't you understand? We got to have our land. In the bush. Where I live. In the bush. You can keep your opera house and your MCD. You can keep your company home. It don't mean nothing to me. And I'm trying to take away your suburban background. We won't be steering any shit down on your farm. My life is different to yours. What are you worried for? You got the money, you got the love. You got it all, but you're still on fire.
Hey, this is Guy Sebastian here, hanging up on our national talk track, your big yarning show, BBM 98.7. I
remember the day. Yarn Up Strong, we're going to jump straight in. We're going to have a yarn there with Susie Teagan, Alliance Chief Executive, and talk about home ownership for remote First Nations communities is a step towards improving their health and well-being for 2024. A very important conversation, and we do have Susie on the line. Susie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Very well, thank you.
Good. Thank you very much for coming to the program. Happy New Year. And where
yeah,
you,
Happy New Year.
Where you
it
based?
Feels like we've already been working for
exactly.
While,
sweat for I'm pouring off the forehead here. But look, thank you for coming to the program. Where are you based? Where are you?
Well, actually, today I'm in Sydney for meetings.
Okay, rightio, fantastic.
So, I've lived in rural and remote Australia, including Alice Springs and Darwin and Dubbo. So I'm fully. You know,
your hands
ensconced
on it.
And have been ensconced in Indigenous health. So,
good.
You know, this is a really important aspect for us.
Yes. Well, we're talking home ownership for remote First Nation communities. Having a home, it builds a foundation, you know what I mean? And you can build something strong there for your family, yes?
Oh, look, absolutely. And the thing is, home ownership provides many different aspects to your well-being, and one of them is that the ownership will provide owners a more financially and secure future.
Yes.
purely because home owners feel less reliant on others for help from family, friends, and government, and you know, then they're able to build up their own wealth. Don't forget, the majority of people, it doesn't matter what their background is, once you have a home ownership, you actually, you know, feel you have something to behind you.
Yes, yes, exactly. In regard to the process, Susie, are we talking IBA being at the table? How do people go about financing home ownership?
Well, that's the thing, you know, that's a discussion for Aboriginal communities to have with government.
Sure.
It's really important that it is a discussion that occurs considering the population and the region. It is much more difficult in remote regions, of course, than it is, say, let's say, regional or rural. But, you know, we are very much for the government and local government and the Aboriginal people sitting down together and saying, you know, we would like people to feel safer for themselves, feel safer for their family, and also feel safer for their property and be able to, you know, meet the need of that community, because some communities have more housing available than others.
Sure.
Some communities are really overcrowded in one, you know, in small houses that have been offered. And Aboriginal people, you know, have a much lower rate of home ownership than mainstream in rural, regional and remote, and indeed the city. But it's usually around 20 to 25% difference.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is time that we start looking at the health and well-being and closing the gap by having those discussions and making sure that people are able to have more confidence in social interactions,
exactly.
They have more confidence in their future and self-esteem, and also provide security for themselves, but also their children and their family. Mm.
Well, exactly, you know. And it also becomes a team effort as well. When you're talking about partners, whether it be husband and wife or de facto relationship, that they've got something together, you know what I mean? And they work on it and work upon it. And when you're talking about renting, some people get lackadaisical regarding renting, but when you're talking ownership, then there's pride that comes to the table, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, with rental properties, they're not allowed to do things to it. They're not allowed to paint the inside. They're not allowed to put pictures up. And, you know, which is understandable from an owner's perspective that's renting out a house. However, the majority of people, you know, would like to personalise something. And if it means that they would like art or pictures on the wall, or they would like a different colour for their wall, doors or whatever, it does create pride. And you can see often the difference between a house that's owned by a person and the garden compared to somebody who is renting a property. And it does provide security and well-being and an improvement in mental health.
Yes, exactly.
And, you know, pride is a really important aspect in terms of living securely and safely and being able to provide a sense of community.
Sure, exactly. Good for the spirit and good for the mind, the heart and what have you. And that, like I said, creates a nice foundation to build an empire upon. Yeah, whether it be, investing in other properties and renting them out, becoming an investor, or grabbing the equity of the house and holidaying or purchasing a car for the family, or whatever the case may be, it becomes a financial tool, doesn't it?
Well, exactly. And financially, I mean, it's sad because there's always a percentage of the population that doesn't own houses, and I have to say some people choose not to own a house,
exactly.
I mean, which is fine. And if you look at the European countries, a 99-year lease is actually quite common. But you're still able to do whatever you like. You're able to put in your own kitchen, you're allowed to paint the walls, you're allowed to, you know, hang things up. And I think for Indigenous people, we must make this happen because we have to close the health gap.
Exactly.
And it would send a very clear message to Aboriginal people that we believe home ownership is important to you and is important to your community, and it will improve your health and your status in the economy and also in the community.
Susie, we're talking a partnership here. Government need to be at the table, but also mayors of communities as well for the vision. And to communicate with the constituents, the people of the community who have a vision to purchase a property, everyone needs to be at the table, and there need to be a process that's accessible for our mob.
Well, absolutely. And if you're looking at rural and remote in particular, I mean, we have some major industries in many of those regions, and it makes sense to have the local government, the local economic development board, the local Aboriginal people, and also state and federal government there. But I have to say, on all sides, and I'm not talking about only one side, but on all sides, you know what, there is a bit of give and take. And I think, you know, put all the things on the table, but then see, well, you know, what benefit is there to us as a greater community?
Exactly.
And what are the things that we agree on, and what are the things that we're willing to let go, or we're willing to, you know, be flexible on? And I think that's the important thing, because it just doesn't, it doesn't help anybody when we start coming to the table aggressive and and you know,
it's gonna be open discussion.
Absolutely, and you know, I think the general community is very much pro Aboriginal people building up their capabilities, and you know, we've got so many great examples of Aboriginal people, you know, starting businesses and running fantastic businesses, supporting communities, and you know, we would like, from a health perspective, for communities and individuals to be able to see all of those people that are already successful homeowners, that are already doing really well, and you know, and then helping others to do the same.
Well, you mentioned economy. We're talking about a space here for First Nation people to be in business, whether it be an electrician or a carpenter. Then you're talking about job employment as well. The old phrase, high tide rises all ships. It's a fantastic platform and ownership, home ownership for our mob in their own community, yes.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've got Aboriginal doctors, Aboriginal nurses and health practitioners. And, you know, they are not only a wonderful, they're not only wonderful professionals for the greater community, but they also are an example to other Aboriginal people that, you know, you can strive for greater roles. And we rely heavily on Aboriginal doctors and nurses and allied health professionals, just as we rely on, you know, international people, because you know, Australia is made up, it's a multicultural country. We're one of the few countries in the world that has so many different nationalities and has a, you know, 3% Aboriginal community, and so we must embrace that.
Yes,
and we must also support people to be able to be independent, because it does affect their health and well-being.
All right, well, thank you very much for the yarn there, Susie. So just to finish off, people in community, what do they need to do to get the ball rolling regarding home ownership?
Well, I think definitely, you know, as a community, come together and then contact their local government and the state government or federal government, because they are the ones that are currently discussing these issues. And I think ask to be listened to.
Yes.
Because if there aren't enough houses and you're overcrowding, you need to be able to go to somebody to have that discussion and call for meetings.
Yes.
Because you can't have that overcrowding. And if it's not okay to happen to the general population, well, then it's not okay for Aboriginal people.
Exactly. Thank you very much for the yarn, Susie. All the best, 2024. Please keep in touch, and we'll be yarning soon.
Thank you very much. Pleasure.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Adelian there. That's Susie Teagan, Alliance Chief Executive. And we're talking about home ownership for the remote, for our remote First Nation communities, which is a step towards improving their health and well-being in 2024. That's a goal for 2024. Maybe you want to tell us what your goal is regarding 2024, your organisation, your family, you yourself as an individual, what's happening in your life, what's your plan of attack, and you don't have to wait till January 1 to have a New Year resolution. a New Year resolution could be at any time. Anybody at any moment can start a new future at any time. Tell us what's happening in your life. Welcome back to National Talk Black. Another year, 2024, Trinity Trev Murray from the Curry. I'm your host for your daily program, National Talk Black, and I'm live here at the First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns and Yidinji Country, BBM, Bumabrip Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS. And a big morning to the BBM crew here who back on shift now as of today, Monday 15 January, and ready to kick the year off. So all is here for your yarns and your deadly music and a fantastic vehicle. Do utilise it.
Across the Torres Straits, from mainland Australia, came this traveller of the world. Dancing the moonlight and shaking brown kulaks and listening to life songs in harmony.
On Dizzy Island,
don't say goodbye, say I won't, cause you always return to TI.
If you eat in the fruit of the Wanga tree with a beautiful island girl, always return to TI.
It takes him a while to realize he's not dreaming. Somehow he's landing in paradise. When the sun shines bright into the evening,
Islanders smile shine right through to sunrise. On Dizzy Island,
don't say goodbye, say I won't, cause you always return to TI.
If you've eaten the fruit of a Wanga tree with a beautiful island girl, you always return to TI.
and sorry. I have become the silence for too many times.
I have become the silence for too many times.
If my mouth is a river, what became the tide?
If my mouth is a river, what became the tide?
Pushing up the stream, my tongue is fighting wild.
Pushing up the stream, my tongue is fighting wild.
Finding at the power that is in this spine.
Finding at the power that is in this spine.
No one can make me sound.
We got Talk Black with Uncle Trevor, Murray from the Curry. Call in on 1-800-422-416, 98.7 FM, BBM.
Hey, mister, you keep on taking. Losing my high vibration. Oh, I feel my body aching. Give me that good energy, good energy, good energy. Stop taking it away from me, away from me, away from me. Just give me that good energy, good energy, good energy. Stop taking it away from me, away from me, away from me.
See, I'm getting tired of your shit. Just give me that good love. Hey, sister, you just know they can't resist her. All that money, ain't it funny how they act? And I won't let you dismiss her. She's our mama, she's our healer. Keep on trying, keep on fighting, take it back. Give me that good energy,
good energy, good energy. Stop taking it away from me, away from me, away from me. Just give me that good energy,
good energy, good energy.
Stop taking it away from me, away from me, away from me.
I'm getting tired of your shit.
Just give me that good love. Good love, that good, 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 good love. Whoa, 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 loud.
energy, good energy. Stop taking it away from me, away from me, away from me.
I'm getting tired of your shit. Just give me that good love.
It's Jessica Malvoy, and you're tuned into National Talk Black, Trevor Tim, Trendy Turb, Murray from the Curry via BBM 98.7 FM, also NERS, National Indigenous Radio Service.
Yes, very good morning, you Daily Mob. Welcome back to your daily program, National Talk Black. It is I, Trevor Tim, Trendy Trev, Murray from the Curry. I come to you live from First Nation Radio Station here in Cairns on Yidinji Country as BBM Bumblebee Media, 98.7 FM, and we go across the nation thanks to NERS, National Radio Service. You can have your Sabre call us on that daily number, 1-800-422-416. Now, children aged 10 to 13 years in Australian justice systems, that's what we're going to talk about with Monash University, Dr. Susan Badawi on the line. A very good morning, Doctor. How are you?
Good morning, Trevor.
Good, thanks. Good morning to you too, Trevor. Great for having me. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for coming to the program. Look, a very important conversation. Youth crime is creating havoc across the planet, you could say, if not this country. Children aged 10 to 13 years in the Australian justice system. So explain where we're at and findings there, please.
Well, what we've seen over the last several years, I guess, the context of all of this research is that lots of Australian states and territories have been chatting about or have agreed to raise their minimum age of criminal responsibility. So we know the NT has raised their age, legislated to raise their age from 10 to 12, and also Victoria and Tasmania and the ACT have also talked about raising their minimum age of criminal responsibility. But what we need to know then is if those kinds of moves are going to happen, and even if they're not going to happen, what could we be doing better to support those younger kids in the justice system instead of doing what we're doing now, which we know is leading to very high rates of recidivism or children returning to the justice system. So that's really where this report has come in and the research has come in.
Well, something's got to give. I mean, when we're talking about crime rate, and it's just escalating, and we're talking about properties and vehicles and what have you, but also fatality as well, which is very sad. We just had a doctor who just passed away because of this. There's got to be something that's got to be done, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, overall, when we do look at youth crime rates across Australia, though, over the last, say, 10 or so years, they actually are decreasing overall. So there are some things happening that are in a positive direction. However, like you say, there's no need for us to let up on thinking about how we can continue to do things better to give kids a better chance at life and also to protect the community. Community are rightfully concerned about the things they're having to deal with. But I guess what our research has shown is
Well, when you look at it, there's kids out there having kids. That's the other thing as well. You there, Dr. Susan? We just lost Dr. Susan. We'll try and get her back and continue the conversation. Stay tuned to your daily program, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416. Doctor, I was just saying in regard to the situation, sad thing is kids out there having kids. We're talking also about bringing parents to the table, or if not, talking to them about some serious ramification of the crimes that their children are committing.
Yeah, well, I mean, a very real need is to start thinking about and implementing approaches that can actually include parents and families. And very often parents have actually been crying out for help to support their children.
Yes,
what
yes.
our research shows is that a lot of the children that come into contact with the justice system at these early ages are already involved with state child protection services. Not only that, we see there's a lot of children there with really serious disabilities, often intellectual disability, ADHD, FASD, things like that, and mental health issues as well that have often gone really unaddressed and unsupported. And parents can be really struggling with those challenges, on top of sometimes parents' challenges struggling with their own challenges. So I guess what the report and the research has identified is some key areas of need in terms of support and services that haven't been filled up. And then what we see is the justice system being used to pick up these issues at the end when those gaps haven't been filled in.
Yeah, exactly. So, and look, the old saying, it takes a community to raise a child. So we're all in this together, and we have to get it together together, don't we, Doctor?
Spot on, yeah, absolutely. So thinking, talking to people, talking to community, talking to families about what's missing, what do we need to do better to be able to stop these pathways? And we can just rely on some of the data and some of the information that we've got from these kinds of reports to help us understand better what's there. So not often, you know, kids being just plain old bad. They're very often kids that have been brought up around considerable violence and family violence, and they've had to struggle with that. But on top of that, have had struggles maintaining contact with culture, community, and dealing, as I said, with things like disability and mental health challenges on top of that. So these are very young kids we're talking about, not talking about 16, 17-year-olds. These are just the 10 to 13-year-olds. So remembering that a lot of places around the world don't even put these kids through the justice system at these ages. Australia's got quite a low age of putting kids through the justice system. So other countries can show us as well how you can implement a different process where you don't need to rely on police and courts and watch houses to be able to support these kids and their families.
And so with the reports and with the findings, who do you take this to? Who do you take this information to?
This kind of information can be picked up by states and territories, attorney generals, certainly in those jurisdictions where they're already planning to raise the minimum age of criminal responsibility or where they already have. NT, ACT, Victoria and Tasmania will be looking at these findings keenly. And the other states and territories still have been having conversations and have been talking at that federal level about, yeah, we'd like to raise the age, or we think in principle it's a good idea, but what are we going to do instead? So, again, this kind of data can give them some ideas.
Sure.
We've not only looked at the kids, we've spoken to professionals in this report. Mm. We've spoken to magistrates and police and youth justice workers. We're talking to ACOs, Aboriginal Community Controlled Organisations, and lawyers, all about what they see when they see these younger kids before them in the justice system and what they think's missing in the current way we approach things.
So we're talking about everybody at the table, aren't we, Dr. Susan?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think any real response, whether you raise the age or not, any real response to these kids and their families need to kind of exactly have that. Everyone at the table, they've got complex needs, which means lots of different needs at the same time. And there's no point just treating it as a justice problem or just a child protection issue. We need to have all the different minds and all the different contributors at the table to understand and better support people.
Dr. Susan, thank you very much for your yarn. Look, all the best for 2024. We'll keep in touch. Keep smiling. We'll talk soon, Doctor.
Thanks, Trevor.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Deliande, Dr. Susan Badawi from the Monash University, and talking about children aged 10 to 13 years in Australia, justice system. And look, there's got to be a lot of work to be done and very serious work, but everybody needs to be at the table. And it's about setting up a foundation, a strong foundation, so these kids can live their life and live a good life and help them with their vision, inspiration and what have you. Yeah, just not bad kids, just good kids doing bad things. That's what it's all about. Have you say Yarn Up Strong, National Talk Black, 1-800-422-416.
In the morning, feel the free sunlight in the ocean. I will never leave this place. This place I call my own.
My own, my own.
My sweet Gary Bay, sweet Gary Bay, my sweet Gary Bay. Oh no, I will never, never run away. Come from, if you stop in this place, we become one. All my ballers and sissies, yeah, we come one.